This is a recording from Jabba. On October 19th, 2007, Jabba hosted a one-day conference called Crafting Intentional Communities, Cooperative Living Along Life's Journey. The event was designed to explore new housing and living innovations for seniors to live, grow, and age in community. This is the third in a series of podcasts from that event and tells the story of the Elder Spirit community near Abingdon.
Between now and when we break for lunch, we are going to hear from Dean Peterson, and we've got Matt has skillfully gotten her bio up here behind me. Dean is, as has been referred to already this morning, the co-founder, developer, the woman who had the first vision to create Elder Spirit Community in Abingdon. And as a part of the Elder Spirit Extension Project that Monica Appleby in the next panel will talk about, I was fortunate enough to be down in Abingdon for a weekend in March with other people from co-housing communities, one of whom is here with us as well, Kathy Buck from North Carolina, to share information and ideas. And so it's great to have been able to spend time with Dean there. And we had been working, Gordon had started even before then, to try to get Dean and Monica up here to Charlottesville. So we feel honored and privileged that they're here. And Dean is going to talk for a little bit, and she's got everything else under control from there. So the panelists are ready to take their spots, and so she's going to get us right back on track. Thank you.
Well, I hope you all had some coffee during the break so you're awake. Anyway, I'm going to like just tell the story of how we developed Elder Spirit and like why we did it. And I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and was getting ready to retire and couldn't find anything. I didn't want to belong to one of those retirement communities like Del Webb has, you know, the Sun City. First, I wouldn't fit, and secondly, I didn't have the money. And then I didn't, and certainly the continuing territory retirement communities look too homogeneous for me. And I am single, don't have children, and so what I really wanted out of I really wanted a good death at the end of my life, and I thought, that what does that entail? It entails people and friends and good care. So that was kind of like where I started with, just purely selfish motivation to do something. And I went to a group in Appalachia. You all know we're from Virginia, don't you? I mean, Virginia does not stop at Roanoke. It goes on down. there was a group there called Federation of Communities in Service that had been in Appalachia for 40 years, and I asked them to form a planning committee. And so seven people joined that committee. We called it Focus Futures, and they came up with a vision and value statement that's now been accepted as a mission statement for Elder Spirit Community. And what that really entails is we really believe in participation, growing to the rest of your life, and providing a meaningful lifestyle for old age. And the values are kind of like environment, simple lifestyle, which is going to have some effect on the present community, as spirituality, mutual support, and dying at home if possible. So when we, when the first thing we did, we were one of the focus members had lived in Abingdon for 10 years, but we wanted to make sure that people knew what we were going to be doing and that it wasn't going to be a cult that we were starting in Abingdon. And so we did a couple of things. We are located in a neighborhood called Kings Mountain, and it's named for a Civil War battle that was fought in North Carolina. And the Kings Mountain neighborhood is 85 houses, so it's really a containable neighborhood. And two of the focus members was moving to Abingdon to help with the Elder Spirit community. And so when they did that, they bought a property next adjacent to the property that Elder Spirit community had. And so, and one of them bakes bread and the other one talks a lot. So the one that talks a lot took the bread and gave it to all the neighbors. Now who wouldn't like us, right? So that's the way we spread the word through the neighborhood. And for the town, town had just built, we don't have a resident college except Emory and Henry 10 miles away. So they built a higher education center, which is a consortium of five Virginia colleges to give degrees. And that was brand new. And so Jean Marie, who had been dean of students at Emory and Henry, took the administrators down to the College for Seniors at North Carolina University in Nashville. And then we started that there. And the first three semesters of people that had belonged to Focus taught 13 different classes there so that everyone knew who we were and what we were about. And they weren't all on co-housing and neighborhood. We taught environmental theology. We taught How Then Shall We Live, just a book that has like a whole process for aging. We just taught anything under the sun. We wanted people to know who we were and what we were about, even before we started. And then the other thing is that we went to the town really early. And first thing I did was talk to the mayor and explain to her, Community Housing Partners, of whom Janica is the director of, had drawn us a little site plan. So this site plan became like our little what we're going to be doing kind of a thing. And so we took that to the mayor and said, like, this is really what we want to do, and this is where we're going to do it. And everybody was thrilled about doing it. It so happened that this was a revitalization. Kings Mountain was a revitalization area for Abingdon. And so they were really glad that we were going to be doing it there, because it then helped the town as well as helped us. And then the other thing we did, when we had to go, we also talked to the planning, to the people in the planning commissions and the engineers and the building inspectors ahead of time, just to say who we were and what do we need to know, because I knew practically nothing about building houses. I mean, I could say nothing really, but I had at least sanded floors in an old house once. But when we went to the planning commission, we were asking for two variances, and one was on the plan unit development. I want you to know, Abington's plan unit development policy came directly from Charlottesville. So when we want to do a plan unit development, we told them to call the mayor of Charlottesville to find out what we were really up to. And this is the way this, so I think that's an interesting take on being here. And by the time we went to the planning commission itself, we asked for two variances. One was on the number of parking spaces, because it looked like all the land was going to be in parking lots the way things were going. And then the other thing was that the policy calls for 5 acres, and we had 3.78, and so we had to get a variance there. And the people from Kings Mountain were really thrilled that we were going to build in their neighborhood, and so we had a whole bunch of people to come. And so when the planning commission, before they introduced themselves or anything, the planning commission said, how many of you are against this project? And no one raised their hand. They went like this, you know, because they couldn't believe that no one would be against it, because usually when a crowd comes to a council or a planning commission or council meeting, it's to oppose something, not to support it. So I didn't know that. So I brought all the supporters with me just to make sure we were going to get what we wanted, which we did. And we built 29 houses, of which 13 are ownership homes and 16 are low-income rentals. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about how we built egalitarianism in, so that we have a homeowners association for all those who own their houses. But the real power in the community and the resident man is the residents association. So we talk about residents rather than homeowners. And we have the residents association. And what the development corporation did is that when they sold the houses, they sold only the footprint under the house, so that what happened was that all the common land was as much a responsibility of the homeowners as it was the renters. Everybody had the same amount of responsibility for maintaining their houses. And then when we looked at the number of grants and low interest loans that we got to pay for the affordable building, and we looked at what was going to be to pay back those loans. We got $1.6 million in grants, loans, foundations, and so forth. And then we had $43,000 a year to pay back in loans every year. So we took what we get for rents, less the $43,000 that's paid back, divided that by 16, and then 16 units divided by 12 months, and it was $150 a month was about what the renters were contributing toward the maintenance budget. So we asked the homeowners to contribute the same, and we offered to do the external of their houses. I can't believe my phone is ringing. But I'm going to ignore it. It'll quit. So we didn't want a two-strata society, you know, where the homeowners felt like they were subsidizing the poor. And so we built everything in. And then the participation, it's been just perfect. I mean, everybody, the Residents Association, you can't tell a resident from an owner when you go to a meeting. And they don't have any more say-so or any less say-so than each other. And there was one other. I can't think of what I was going to say there. That phone really got me there. And then and we call ourselves, as you saw on the brochures they gave you when you signed up, that we're a community of mutual support and late-life spirituality. And Drew Leader was our architect for spirituality. You know, we had Community Housing Partners for our architect for the buildings, and so we had an architect for spirituality also. And Drew Leader was the one that helped us to put that together. And we have a quite elaborate admissions process so that people really qualify to come in. And then at the end of that, we give them a paper on mission and values. We give them a paper on consensus decision making. We give them a paper on independent living criteria, because you have to be independent when you move in, but if you become dependent, you don't have to move out. But we told everyone, and then we have a mutual support agreement. And after people read those, a co-housing paper, after people read those and have an interview, then they look at what we call a goodness of fit questionnaire. And the goodness of fit is, in the Catholic Church, it's called an examination of conscience, I guess. But what it is, it's a paper where people see what's going to be expected when they move in terms of living in community, having some kind of self-growth expectancy from themselves, which is spirituality, and then and contribute to some of the physical work that's going to be there. And so according to their ability and interests is the way we put that one. And they answer that for themselves. They don't give it to us. And then we ask them to sign a participation agreement that has about the same qualities in it. And they agree that they'll do that if they can move in. And so that's the way we do that. And the Housing Authority, that's what I wanted to tell you, does all of our income eligibilities, and they do the compliance, do the inspections and the recertifications so that we stay in compliance with what's required by getting the public monies. So that's the way we manage all of that. The other thing that I want to talk about is what it's like living here. I tell people it's like going to surgery. You know, you go there and you're apprehensive and you wonder what it's going to be like. And when you're finished, you just hope you're glad you did it. Well, I'm glad we did it. I'll say that much in terms of doing developing this community. It took us a few years to do it. And the reason I'm glad is because, well, I think the best way to put it is one day one of the women came to me and said, "I can't believe something this good happened to me at this age." And when she said that to me, I thought, that makes it all worthwhile. I mean, what else do you need, you know? And I also think that I was kind of looking for a utopian community, and instead we're a lot more human than that. And now I realize that utopia communities don't survive and human communities do, so I'm sure we're going to survive. And I'm going to stop there, and we're going to have a question and answer period, but before we do that, we have a panel of other types of community besides co-housing here, and each one of them is going to explain who they are and what their community is. And then Zeb is with co-housing, he's going to be here. And then Monica Appleby works for Elder Spirit and does the extension project, and of course we want you to know what that is. And so there, I'm going to have the panel to come up right now.